Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear and affirm that you tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay. We have Ms. Gina Morrison and Dinah Henriel with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Norman. Members of the board, my name is Gina Morrison. I am a staff member of the board's land disposal unit. I will be giving the staff presentation for an order being considered for adoption today. This item is the waste discharge requirement order for the closure of the Cummings Road Class 3 solid waste disposal site. This item is no longer being contested by Recology. After meeting with Recology and Humboldt Waste Management Authority, all parties agreed to have the issues addressed within the framework of the cleanup and abatement order for the Cummings Road burn ash site, which was issued in April. I will explain the relationship between the two sites during my presentation. After the presentation, the Humboldt Waste Management Authority team will discuss the landfill closure and give an overview of ongoing corrective action. Then, any additional public comments will be heard prior to the board's vote. Recology and their consultants, whom were listed on the public notice, have dropped their request to speak. I would like to enter the file into the record. Your agenda package includes the executive officer's summary report, the order and monitoring and reporting requirements, response to comment documents, and the public hearing notice. Please note that since this item went out for public comments twice, there are two responses to comments in your package. During my presentation, I will be providing an overview of the landfill, discuss the history of permitting enforcement. This includes the relationship between the Cummings Road Class 3 solid waste disposal site and the Cummings Road burn ash site, which relates to the new cleanup and abatement order for the burn ash site and many of Recology's comments to the proposed order. I will be summarizing the ongoing corrective action work that has been undertaken because of significant groundwater contamination from the landfill. I will discuss the proposed order that is before you today and present my conclusion with recommendations. Sorry, this is not showing up very well. This is a site vicinity map on a topographic base, and the facility boundary is in red at the bottom of this. The site is approximately 2 miles from southeast of Eureka off Myrtle Avenue, then Mitchell Road. Note that it is one ridge removed from freshwater. The facility covers a total of area of approximately 107 acres. The Class 3 waste management unit encompasses approximately 34 acres of the total facility. Please note that the Class 3 waste management unit in the proposed order refers to the 34-acre permitted disposal footprint, and the proposed order is for the closure of the Class 3 waste management unit. The site drains both Spears Creek and subdrainages on the Ryans Creek, which then both drain to Freshwater Slough and then to Humboldt Bay. This figure is from the 2006 aerial photograph. The facility boundary is shown in red. The black with the W is the 34-acre permitted facility, and the black line with the BD is a portion of the burn dump site that is on Humboldt Waste Management Authority's property. The burn ash site will be discussed with the permit history. I would just like to note that not all the figures are oriented in the same direction, but all have the main landfill building on it. This will help you with your orientation. The site is currently regulated by 3 WDR orders. It's site-specific order, the land disposal super order updating all landfills to include the California Code of Regulations Title 27, and an order changing the discharger from NorCal Waste Systems, City Garbage Company, which is now Recology, to Humboldt Waste Management Authority. It also is regulated by cleanup and abatement order R1-2006-28. This was an update of the original 2005 cleanup and abatement order. This was an executive officer issued erosion due to erosion problems after the site regrading in 2005. It included corrective action monitoring well project that was happening at the time. They have completed all the work in the 2006 cleanup and abatement order with the exception of the monitoring well work. The monitoring well project is still in progress and the new order includes this work. The groundwater plume has changed since we were first requesting new wells, so we are giving Humboldt Waste Management Authority the chance to prove that the new monitoring wells are no longer needed. The proposed order will replace the three current WDR orders and rescind the 2006 cleanup and abatement order. The current site-specific order is for an operating landfill, which Cummings Road Solid Waste Disposal Site is not. This area began use as a burn dump on both sides of the ridge at Cummings Road. Oops. Sorry, I was going to also say, let me go back. One thing that you need to know is that the term burn dump and dump are used for waste disposal that occurred during the time period before board orders were required. When you hear the term landfill or solid waste disposal site, that's referring to a time when these activities occurred under board order. In 1974, the board first issued WDRs. It included three separate orders for areas on both sides of the ridge at Cummings Road. The sites were known as A, B, and C. Permitted disposal only occurred at Site A. Burn waste is thought to be in portions of all three sites. Here's a site map from the original WDRs. Note the building in the bottom portion of the figure. Oops. Very much. Excuse me. Note the building on the bottom left-hand side, which corresponds to the existing building seen in the earlier aerial photo. This figure would be at the same orientation of the previous figures if it were rotated clockwise about 45 degrees. Waste disposal under WDRs has only occurred at Site A, which was a portion of the current Class 3 waste management unit. There is burn dump waste on both sides of the ridge, and the road basically formed along the ridge. In 1975, City Garbage, now Recology, incorporated and purchased property. It included sites A, B, and C, and they operated the site. In 1979, Recology was given updated WDRs for Site A, and the board rescinded WDRs for sites B and C. Burn waste area that never had disposal under the order became known as the Cummings Road Burn Ash Site. Because the Cummings Road burn ash site never had disposal that occurred under permit, it has different regulatory requirements than the Class 3 waste management unit. But because there is burn ash waste in the Class 3 waste management unit, it started as part of the burn ash site. There is a unique opportunity to dispose of the remaining waste from the burn ash site into the Class 3 waste management unit. In 2000, Recology sold to Humboldt Waste Management Authority a property which included the site and a portion of the burn ash site. Recology still owns the remaining portion of the burn ash site. The burn ash site is subject to a cleanup and abatement order recently issued to both Humboldt Waste Management Authority and Recology. The burn ash site was a factor in Recology's comments on this order, and our burn ash site cleanup and abatement order has removed their objections to this proposed order going forward. This figure was from a report done by one of Recology's consultants, Cardinal Entrix, in 2011. The red line, which changes to yellow as it goes through the burn dump, is the property boundary of Humboldt Waste Management Authority. The yellow areas are thought to be where burn ash exists but is covered, and the orange areas are where burn ash is exposed, including where it flowed down creeks. The yellow diamonds are rural residential buildings. Recology owns the remaining burn ash site, including creek areas that contain the waste. Please note that Humboldt Waste Management Authority's interpretation of the boundaries near the landfill building and the Class 3 Waste Management Unit are slightly different than those shown here. Houma Waste Management Authority's burn ash boundaries are based on trenching done on their property. These boundaries were shown on the earlier 2006 photo. The current site-specific order mandated a series of corrective action measures due to groundwater contamination and required the construction of aligned federal Subtitle D specific aligned area to federal Subtitle D specifications for waste disposal. Unlike most landfills of the time that were allowed to completely build out their 1993 waste footprints before needing to comply with the new regulations, Cummings Road had to stop using its old waste footprint as soon as construction allowed and begin using the Subtitle D lined area to prevent further groundwater contamination. This was to allow the county time to determine their long-term waste strategy before closure of the landfill as a corrective action measure. The corrective action work to date includes a groundwater interception trench installation, leachate collection and recovery system installation, landfill gas extraction system installation, placement of a tow berm and additional soil cover placement, and completion of the preliminary and final closure plans. Final closure of the Class 3 waste management unit is the only outstanding corrective action requirement from the current site-specific WDR. The site has not been open for general land disposal since Houma Waste Management Authority took it over in 2000. In 2005, the site was regraded to achieve slopes necessary for closure and to place waste from landfill activities that were found to be outside of the permitted boundaries. This waste was placed in the Subtitle D area, and since the current operating permit mandates waste only be placed in this area, no waste has been taken since 2005. These photos were taken last week by site operator Mark Springman. In this photo, you are looking northwest down the front face of the Class 3 waste management unit. As you can see, this landfill was built in a valley, in this case, the headwaters of Spears Creek. In this photo, you're at the toe looking the opposite direction from the previous photo, to the southeast. The large pipes on the sides are for stormwater, and these smaller pipes are part of the leachate collection system and are being gravity fed to a tank just outside the photo. This leachate is then pumped up to a tank at the top of the landfill for disposal at the Eureka Wastewater Treatment Plant. Here is a photograph looking west at the interception trench, which is uphill and upgradient of the Class 3 waste management unit. It was built to cut off as much groundwater from the upper aquifer, which is in the Hookton Formation, as possible, and divert it around the landfill. Diversion rates have seen a decline with time, and rehabilitation of the trench is part of closure. Closure is mandated by the current corrective action. The proposed order is for the closure of the Class 3 waste management unit and will replace the three existing orders, will rescind the 2006 cleanup and abatement order, and allows for phase closure and allows placement of the burn ash waste into the Class 3 waste management unit prior to final closure. The phase one area was capped in the summer of 2012 to advance corrective action in the landfill. The phase two area, which includes the Subtitle D area, remains uncapped and has remaining capacity. Burn ash site waste can be taken in the Subtitle D area if Houma Waste Management Authority wishes to, because of the shared site history between the burn ash site and the landfill. The prior burned up waste disposal on both sites means the new disposal of burn ash waste into the landfill constitutes a consolidation of burn ash onto a contiguous parcel that already contains ash. And this scenario is currently exempt from hazardous waste requirements per a March 1995 Department of Toxic Substance Control memo. Most burn dumps contain hazardous waste because of the prevalence of metals, and the burn ash site is no exception. However, these metals are generally not mobile in the environment and should be well contained by the Subtitle D lined unit. This figure would also need to be rotated clockwise about 45 degrees to match the orientation of the first figures. The figure shows the phases of closure, and here's phase one that was completed in the summer of 2012, and there's the phase two closure, which includes the Subtitle D lined area that is still uncapped and available for the burn ashways. In this photo, you are standing on Cummings Road, looking southeast down Cummings Road. To the left is the southwest face of the Class 3 unit, and it has already been capped. On the other side by the trees is the start of the ash site. In this photo, you are up on the ridge behind the landfill, looking more or less due north. The interception trench is in the foreground, and the phase two area is there, and Humboldt Bay is in the background. In conclusion, the proposed order allows fulfillment of the current corrective action requirements. The Class 3 waste management unit closure will reduce leachate generation. The proposed order allows flexibility for Humboldt Waste Management Authority to place burn ash site waste prior to final closure if they so choose. Recology's issues have been addressed by the recently issued burn ash site cleanup and abatement order. Staff recommends the board adopt as proposed. Thank you. I would be happy to answer any question the board has.
Mr. Chairman, hearing this made me recall 39 years ago, I did sue on behalf of the some of the Cummings Creek residents, did receive a settlement against the Waste Authority, and part of that settlement was that they would be subject to water quality jurisdiction. So I'm going to recuse myself and leave the room. I just suddenly remembered that far back.
Yeah. Basically, the site, they put in the first wells and found out they had a big groundwater plume. And hope to make Cummings Road the landfill of 50 years or 100 years kind of went away.
Let the record reflect that Mr. Corbett recused himself and jumped off the airplane. Okay. Thank you. So you're ready for questions?
Yeah.
Hey, Gina, so again, just to be clear, there's a lot of comments in here about this closure plan from Recology. Right. And are you, and I, just so I'm clear, because it was really the way that I read it was much about the burn dump and dealing with this burn dump, but the way that this has settled out is that the burn dump will go under a separate program under cleanup and abatement order, mm-hmm. allowing this Class 3 waste management unit to close. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And at the same time, as you just said, it allows but does not require the burn dump material to be placed within this Class 3 unit, with an exception that was the DTSC, Department of Toxic Substance Controls, allows burn ash dump that contains, in this case, lead and other metals at higher than normal units than we would allow in a Class 3. However, in this case, because of the allowance and recognition of handling waste, it allows it but does not require.
Right. You know, commonly when a burn dump site needs to be closed, a lot of times it's off the cliff like it is here. And, you know, it's generally the Cal Recycle that deals with these sites. And what they will do is they will have them consolidated in an area that can be capped. In this case, the Class 3 waste management unit already has burn ash waste in it. And so, you know, even though it's now like two separately regulated units, that shared history allows us to fall under this DTSC memo, you know, because obviously it would be a much longer process if we, you know, had to go get an exception from them for the hazardous waste. But it's already there. There's already lead waste in the bottom
right.
of Cummings Road.
Right. But, no, it may make
yeah.
great sense in a practical
yes,
sense.
Yes, it does. And it is certainly a better, you know, environmental standard than it would have if it's just being treated as a burn ash site, which would only have 2 feet of cover. In this case, it gets moved to a site that not only has leachate and gas recovery, it has a full liner system and will have a full geomembrane cap over it and has monitoring wells. There really aren't any monitoring wells over on the other side. So it's a better
deal.
Yes,
and at the same time, these comments that where there was a robust amount of comments regarding the dealing with this burn ash dump was March 23rd. I was just looking at these dates. So this cleanup and abatement issue relating to the burn dump came about relatively recently.
Right. Basically, after Recology gave us their new comment letter after the second time this permit went out for public comment, they requested another meeting with us, and so all parties sat down and hashed out, you know, the issues. Because if you look at some of the issues, you know, the burn ash site, there is at least, you know, even if you didn't consider that it's better to put it on the line unit, there are areas that could not be closed in place because of the slope. And if that material is moved, you know, some of their issues would go away. Like, they really wouldn't worry about the stormwater eroding the burn ash waste if it's not there anymore.
Right.
And also they were concerned that the landfill might get capped before the two parties, Humboldt Waste Management Authority and Recology, could deal with their issues. And so the cleanup and abatement order puts the two parties on equal footing to get going on the burn ash site. So it gives a place for those comments to live and be worked out between the two parties. Our permit already gives them the flexibility they need to do the project. But, you know, we can't ever tell one discharger to take another discharger's waste.
Correct.
There's, you know, assumed liability once that waste goes over. So Humboldt Waste Management Authority needs to make up their own mind about what the final disposition. But it makes sense, and, you know, I'm hoping that both parties are able to move forward.
Yeah, I think it makes sense from the standpoint of a permitting to allow that flexibility. Of course, you don't require it, but it allows.
Right. Right. I mean, early on when, you know, I mean, the history of this closure is that the closure plan came to me at least four times, and I rejected it. And one of the rejections was Humboldt Waste Management Authority didn't know for sure whether they had burn ash waste. And their first consultant, I would just like to say it's not Clayton Coles who's coming up now, basically told me, oh, no, they don't have burn ash waste. And I made them go trench to prove it, and sure enough, they found that they do have a sliver of it on their property. And then when at the same time, you know, when they did the regrading, they had heavy rains and their intermediate stormwater containment system was not very good, and they basically had a bunch of soil go down the hill. And during all the scrambling to take care of this, they also noticed that there was a slide in the burn ash waste. So this made us get going and say, you know, for me to say to Recology and Humboldt Waste Management Authority, you guys need to see what's going on with this site as well. And so Recology and Humboldt Waste Management Authority have already done a great body of work before any board, you know, issue orders were ever issued. Basically on me saying, you need to go figure out what's going on your property. I have a stack of reports this high on the burn dump already. So they're already into the process, and, you know, now it's time to figure out the actual action.
Okay, that sounds great. And to be clear, too, this landfill's in corrective action. This closure of
yes.
the waste management unit is kind of the final thread, at least, of actionable items, and corrective action carries through the 30 years of post-closure maintenance and monitoring.
Right. At this point, we'll put the lid on and, you know, see what happened to the plume. You know, they've already had plume improvement since the regrade, which also led to more leachate collection. They've also put in more gas wells during this kind of closure period. And so we already see the plume getting better.
I got to admit, it's a bit ironic to have the cleanup and abatement order be the tool that got solution here and resolution on how to get to here. But it sounds like right. that to me that through not only this permit, but then able to deal with these waste managements in distinct ways, that mm-hmm. offers opportunities and flexibility in the permitting and actionable items.
Right.
Very good. Any other questions for Gina? Gina, okay. Thank you. What we'll do, Clayton Cole, I believe, is up
right.
next. Come up and talk to us, Clayton, and we'll come back.
Yes.
Okay? By the way, if anybody wants to speak on this, I have one speaker card right now. Yep. So if anybody wants to speak on this item, please get a speaker card to Patty.
Hi, my name is Clayton Coles. I'm with Lawrence and Associates. I'm the consultant for Humboldt Waste Management Authority. They asked me to, and Gina asked me to speak about the landfill today. My focus is more on the history and the overview of the corrective action. I want you to hear with me today is Mark Lovelace. He's the chairman of the HWA Management Board. Mark, raise your hand there. Sherman Shapiro, he's a board representative for Cummings Road Landfill. Jill Duffy, the executive director of HWMA, is here. And Jim Test, he's the former executive director, and he's now a special projects consultant on this project to keep continuity. Jill's been around with the board now for 6 months. She's been the new director, and Jim has since retired. And then Nancy Diamond, the authority legal counsel, is here. And Mark Springman, the landfill manager, is here.
We've got a full house. Thank you for coming.
Well, it's close to home.
There's no place like home.
In fact, I was out standing on the deck during the break, and I think if you look off to the northeast, you can see the landfill just barely in a gap in the trees. So I don't know if you've ever done a board meeting where you can actually see the site from the board meeting place.
You know, you could, Clayton, you could surely tell an engineer or a geo when you know where the landfill is from downtown and you by pinpoint geocores. Carry on, sir.
Why? I do find this stuff fun.
Absolutely.
Here's the same 2006 photo that you've seen from that Gina showed you. One of the things I just want to talk to you, she's already described the acreage and of the landfill, and you can see the waste limits. As a matter of fact, I have my own laser printer. It's a little brighter than Gina's, so guard your eyes. There's a couple of things that we look at when we're looking at this landfill, and one of them is this little feature right here we call the toe. And it's played prominently in the history of the landfill. And then this feature right here, which is called the groundwater interception trench. And, of course, we've talked about the burn dump over here. The toe is got a slope of about 4-1. Which is flatter than most landfills. And there's a few 3-1 spots, and then we have a flat top deck up here. The toe drains down here into the headwaters of Spears Creek, and the other end of the landfill drains into this groundwater intercept and goes down here into the unnamed tributary of Ryan Creek. Since they started studying this landfill, there's been over 100 wells put in at this site. Just to give you an idea of the level of scrutiny. And this site is one of the ones that I've looked at. It's probably one of the more complicated ones that I've dealt with because of its complicated history and its complicated geometry and the wet location. Believe it or not, Eureka gets approximately 36 inches of rain a year. That's what we get over in Redding, believe it or not. But it's more humid here and you have less evapotranspiration. So this is a wetter landfill than most. And there's 43 groundwater monitoring wells. There's over 40 gas extraction wells, 21 leachate extraction wells. A lot of them were in place in 2000 when HWMA bought the property, but they've installed a number more afterwards. And some of them we recommended when we were developing the report of waste discharge for the site. There's also... due to the geology, there's also springs and seeps that are monitored for the landfill. And you can feel free to stop me and ask questions anytime if you'd like. As Gina told you, that the site was used for a burn dump until I show 1969 in my records, and it was then converted to what at the time they called a sanitary landfill. That term has always amused me, but. That's what they called them at the time, sanitary landfills. But in 1986, this shortly after the Calderon Act, and when people were installing monitoring wells around landfills, they discovered there was groundwater contamination downgrading from the landfill. And subsequent to that period, there were a number of cleanup and abatement orders, and quite a number of groundwater monitoring wells were installed, both on-site and downgradient from the landfill. Starting in about 1988, the landfill started installing clay liners. During that period, there was a transition of regulations that came through. 1993 was when when the Code of Federal Regulations requiring liners came through in 1993. Prior to that, the state was requiring clay liners. Now, one of the things they did at this site is there was already garbage in place. There was no place to spread laterally, and so they put clay liners over previous garbage and leachate sumps over previous garbage and to prevent infiltration. So they early on, they figured out that part of the issue was infiltration of rainwater and that creating leachate and that affecting the groundwater quality. To try and intercept that groundwater and keep it from going into the landfill, I think they also early on realized that there were water entering the landfill from the sides, they installed this groundwater intercept trench. And that project occurred over a period of several years from 1994 to 1998, and they excavated over 800,000 cubic yards out of that trench right there. And then they took all that soil and they put it down on the toe, 800,000 cubic yards, and there was a 2-to-1 side slope there. And you can see this little light area or that little dark area right there, and there's this area on both sides. That's where that toe berm or the soil was placed initially. Well, and another thing you should know is that under that toe berm, there's a bunch of drains that they installed when they first built that. And so there's actually water, groundwater, that gets collected from the toe of the landfill and gets treated as leachate. And in 1995, perimeter gas migration was detected, and then a gas system was installed in 1998. And then in 1997, cracks were noted on the toe berm. Well, the landfill is built in a canyon, and the top of the waste is relatively flat. And then when you put dirt on top of that, what it does is compresses the waste and causes tension, and that's what caused the cracks. Then they also were concerned about wet spots down at the toe, and so as a result, what they did was went back and took a bunch of that soil out. In the midst of all this, before this happened, about 2000, Humboldt Waste Management Authority bought the landfill, and they submitted their first closure plan in 2002. So one of those iterations of the closure plan or corrective action plan recommended taking a bunch of the soil that they put on the toe and moving it back up on the top of the landfill. So they took 450,000 cubic yards of that soil they put on the toe and moved it back up on the top of the landfill. So when we became involved with the landfill in about 2008, 2009, there were still about 20 to 30 feet of soil on the toe of the landfill, but now the slope is flatter and more stable, and it's all had lots of time to surcharge and settle. So when you load waste up with lots of feet of soil that was at one time 40 to 60 feet deep, it squishes the waste, compresses it, and waste is not like a spring. It doesn't spring back. It stays compressed. And when they removed all that soil, that waste was nice and tight and compacted. So the whole cracking problem is gone away, and the toe is stable now. They monitored the slope stability for a number of years, and it hasn't moved a bit. As a matter of fact, it hasn't hardly settled at all in the several years that it was studied. And then through the subsequent years, that was 2005 when they removed all that soil and put it back on top. In addition, right in this area here, they found some waste that was outside the 1993 limit. And as you may recall, the 1993 was the limit at which you have to have your footprint established and could no longer put any waste in unlined cells. And so they found waste in the unlined area, and they removed about 75,000 cubic yards of waste from that area and put it back on top of the landfill as well. So that was a very busy construction season. And in 2006, as you heard from Gina, it was fall of 2005, winter 2006, they had big giant storms, and the site wasn't quite prepared well enough, and they had lots of erosion. Had some significant problems. That was a benefit to me because the landfill staff knows what can happen, and so it makes my job easier to design things that are more stringent. And then finally, we installed some more wells within the last couple of years to collect leachate and gas, and finally the first phase of the closure cap was last summer. This landfill is more complicated than most. Like I said, they put liners on top of garbage to prevent infiltration, and this one is kind of faded, but these are all the different periods of liners that were installed and the contours from when they were installed. But the red ones are the geosynthetic liners, the plastic liners, basically. And that's the area we left uncapped because that's the area where we could put the ash in and be able to collect any leachate that might come from that. These other areas have clay liners beneath them. And you'll note that this is rotated a little bit. You'd have to rotate it to the right. Here's the toe, and here's the groundwater intercept trench, and Cummings Road is right along here. I brought this slide today because, well, we just put a lot of work into it, and I wanted you guys to see it. There's, you know, imagine you have all these wells, leachate wells and groundwater wells, over 100 of them. That's lots of data for a scientist to play with. That's just like a playground for us. And this really kind of portrays the complexity of the site. This edge right over here, one I'll fit on one page, actually matches up right in here. And so you're seeing two ends of the same thing. But you can see the old waste down in here. This is the old canyon. I'm going to go back a slide here. Let's see if I can. And you'll see this little line right here is a cross-section that goes through this groundwater intercept trench, through the middle of the landfill, and down the toe. And it's kind of a zigzag because that's where the wells were that we could use for data. But you can see there's an old canyon fill of waste that goes all the way down the slope. And then you can see this red line right here. They went back in where they went back in and put in the liners. So basically, that's a big funnel that collects all of the water that may seep into that landfill and is extracted as leachate. And there are leachate sumps at these collection points. And this is the groundwater intercept trench. And so they excavated that groundwater intercept trench to get down to the top of the Hookton Formation. And the Hookton Formation is a Pleistocene sandstone. It's really quite durable and not very erosive in its native form. As a matter of fact, there's a cut here that's 1.5 to 1. It's fairly steep, and it just holds up fine. But when you take that soil and you disturb it, it's like rock flour, and it's very erosive. So we've had to be very careful about that. And then beneath that is the Wildcat Formation, which is older and more dense. And so water tends to move through the Hookton Formation down to the top of the Wildcat and move down slope. And so you can see this contact between the Wildcat and the Hookton Formation daylights in the bottom of the landfill. And so they went through and constructed this groundwater intercept trench to prevent that water from getting beneath the landfill. So that was a big, big, big project. And so there is a little spot in the bottom of the landfill where the groundwater actually rises above the surface of the soil, and so a small spot in the bottom of the landfill does have water in it, and you can see we've installed a bunch of leachate extraction wells to control that water and prevent it from leaving the site. And the direction of groundwater movement, once again, this one is rotated slightly, is to the north. Well, you can't see the important lines on this, but right in here, there's a line that comes up. It's a green line you can probably see on your handouts that shows where the groundwater was prior to, I believe, 2006. And we use electrical conductivity as an indicator of general water quality, and it's a good tool to use to look at whether water is leaving the site or impacting the groundwater. Doesn't mean that the water is necessarily grossly impacted, but it does indicate there's some mineralization that's making it off-site. And in 2006, the high EC, or the 200 micromo EC limit, went clear up here off the site. And as of 2012, it's basically pulled back in. So the groundwater quality has improved over time. Initially, there were some miscellaneous volatile organic compounds detected down gradient, and they aren't anymore. Maybe in one well, I think, right in that area. So the impacts of the landfill have improved over time. So down gradient degradation consists of elevated salts, And salts are basically minerals that the landfill imparts into the groundwater. Leachate is basically salts that have been dissolved from the waste and have entered the water and have moved with the water down and mixed with the groundwater. And volatile organic compounds can either come from that leachate or they can come from landfill gas. And so the constituents of concern here have been VOCs, and elevated salts are not so much of a health threat, but they are a good indicator. So the highest VOCs concentrations generally occurred in the late 1980s and early 1990s. You know, when we looked at the record when we were doing the report of waste discharge for this, we found a couple of pulses, and then found that once they put the liners in, things started getting better. And when they installed the leachate intercept trench, things started getting better. And so it was clear to us that, you know, preventing rainfall from getting into the landfill is the key here to corrective action. And so once the liners were installed, the VOC concentrations dropped immediately. Also, the groundwater levels stopped having so much of a, if you look at a groundwater elevation graph, the groundwater elevation gets affected by seasonal effects, by rainfall during the winter. And those effects were buffered by the liners, indicating that less infiltration was getting in the winter through the landfill. So the extent of groundwater degradation has decreased since 2008. Once again, infiltration of stormwater is probably the most significant contributor to groundwater degradation. And also a little bit of groundwater seepage that I described before may be contributing, although we've done quite a bit to solve that. So when we prepared the report of waste discharge, we found that there was generally good coverage on the landfill. We recommended installing some more gas wells and another leachate extraction well in that deepest part where the groundwater is, and a leachate piezometer. And those have been installed. That was kind of like what we call our first phase of closure. And phase one of the closure cap has been installed. And so that phase one covers that area that doesn't have liners under it, where water can seep in and actually get down to the bottom of the landfill. So we've got liners under one part, and we've got a cap on another part. So I think we've really nipped leachate getting to the groundwater in the bud. This is the one you've already seen from Gina. Once again, this is rotated. And you'll see that this last year we closed this area right here, which is a side slope, and basically left, the toe and part of the top deck, basically left the area open that had liners under it. So we have cap, liner, and the water that's, the infiltration is controlled. The one thing that leaving this top deck open that does bother us and the owner is that you've got basically a giant funnel collecting rain, and that costs money to dispose of that leachate. Once that's capped, that will go away. So that's one of the reasons they're anxious to get that capped and move on with final closure. These are kind of a little bit washed out, but these are pictures of the final closure. This is the before picture. A lot of the lines you see crossing the landfill are gas lines, but there's also just a myriad of half-round culverts and different culverts running all over the place that were installed in 2005 when they had the big runoff emergency. They cobbled stuff together knowing that they were going to close it. So we've come through to the rescue to eliminate a lot of this stuff. So these are before pictures. And this is the toe. We're looking basically towards us. So there's construction. This is really interesting site. Although it's a pre-subtitle D landfill, this portion of it, because there are liners on the site, the staff required that we install a synthetic cap. So it's basically impermeable. And because we installed a synthetic cap, and because the soil is really erosive and made of sand, we have to put a drainage layer on top of that cap. And so this cap has a 2-foot foundation layer that's compacted to the required compaction. It has a geosynthetic cap And this year, we tried, this time we tried, it was a fairly new product by Agru, and it basically has little bumps in it that support a geotextile that provides the drainage layer. And so any water that gets through the sand is collected by a drainage layer and goes into drainage pipes or drainage ditches. And because the sand lets lots of water through, we had to put lots of drainage structure underneath that landfill. There's a picture. You can't see see it on this very well, but you can see the pipe boots where we had to have penetrations for wells. And you'll also see the fabric or the geotextile, and that's 60 mil high-density polyethylene, and has little bumps all over it. And on top of that, they put a layer of 8-ounce woven geotextile, and that's our drainage layer. And if you look up the slope there past all those generators, there's a trench, and that trench collects that water before it runs all the way down the slope so it doesn't saturate that layer and cause pore pressure, that drainage layer. There's the after picture. One of the benefits of having had erosion on a site before is that when we recommended putting jute netting over the whole surface because this sand is really erosive, the HWMA staff didn't even blink. They said, great, let's do it right. And this has gone through one winter, and we had some really, really significant rainfall last December. I don't know if you guys remember that. And it's held up just great. And part of this, we want long-term no maintenance, and so instead of putting a bunch of culverts down the slope, we put rock-lined ditches that are sized for a 100-year storm event. And we have a plan in place for putting the burn dump ash into the landfill. These are preliminary contours. I tried to make the piles so they disturb the fewest number of wells. And they may be slightly different when we're done. This is the toe right here. It's the groundwater intercept trench. So that's where we intend to put the burn dump ash. So the next steps, develop a plan for the burn ash site cleanup, perform the burn ash area closure, and place the waste in the landfill, and perform the final closure of the remaining landfill. Those are the goals, and that's kind of the timeline we'd like to see. It's aggressive, but that's our goal. And any questions?
Well, thank you, Clayton. A couple things. Just as a matter of course, we've heard a lot about landfills our last couple of meetings, and sure. I know you were involved in Central Landfill down yes. our way. And I just got to ask, in your professional opinion, I know that you said, I can't remember the number, 43 wells, I think, groundwater wells here, something like that. Yeah, 43 wells and 21 leachate wells. This site seems to me to be well characterized, but in your professional opinion, this site is characterized to the point of being, of indicating release, being able to indicate release and being protective under the closure policy or closure plan then of any future release. It's, this thing has a robust monitoring, I assume.
Very robust.
Yeah, and it sounds like that. And again, I'm just asking your professional opinion. Yes. You're the consultant on the record.
Yeah, that is my opinion.
Yeah, very good. By the way, I think, closing landfills and getting to this final closure, it looks like you're about a year and a half, 2 years away from that, assuming that the burn ash dump material gets in here or not. Closing these landfills, I think, is always a good thing, in my humble opinion. I work on landfills as well in my professional career. And having the closure on these, especially when there's this pre-subtitle D and after subtitle D type components of these landfills, become, as you said, I think, challenging and tricky. So,
and it's nice to have a client that wants to close the landfill and has the funds to do so.
Yes, absolutely. And the willing participant to go forward to do so is very important. And to have those post-closure maintenance funds in place to be able to expend those monies and get that process started and going is absolutely well. One other question, too. I'm curious, how is landfill gas handled on this site? Is there a flare?
There's a flare. There's a landfill gas extraction system. And I think there's, well, I think I have it in here, but there's a whole bunch of gas wells.
That's okay.
Both infill gas wells, we had them install some horizontal gas collectors near the top of the landfill where they had a small issue. And then there's also sentry wells that they installed early in the process to control perimeter migration. So the perimeter migration is definitely controlled. And landfill gas, they passed their AB 32 nice. Surface monitoring too.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
And in that interest too, then they have, it sounds like all the components are here. Really what you, in this final closure plan then, we're talking about capping a dump, or actually a landfill, excuse me, a landfill that we, this goes forward then from here, and this is kind of the final piece to closure, and then 30 years of post-closure monitoring and maintenance.
Yes, they've installed all the additional wells that we requested have been yeah. installed, and everything is done except that final piece of the puzzle.
By the way, I think it's very smart to put those in, those penetrations, as you showed in that one picture, with when you're talking liners and geosynthetics, to put those penetrations in now. Very good. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah.
Mr. Hill.
Thanks. Clayton, I didn't see it in the order of the MRP. Do you have continued slope stability monitoring on the tow?
Well, we have 5-year ISO settlement maps, but we don't have, there's no continuous monitoring.
Okay, so, obviously there'll be some sort of, there'll be traffic going through there, personnel checking it out, visual inspection, tension cracks or something like that.
Right.
Seismic event or big rainfall or
yes.
the very rare combination of the two. But I didn't know if you had inclinometers or anything that were sitting out there. It seemed like you've got this blank canvas for having something in there to check that out, but it seemed like from the history and how that's been regraded and replaced, it's not so much of a concern, but just
right.
more of a curiosity point if that's something, how you're keeping an eye on it.
Well, we do have an operations plan, and they're required, and I don't remember the seismic events. If there's a seismic event, they're required to inspect it.
Sure.
But at this site, I'm particularly comfortable because it's been surcharged, and mm-hmm. then it was monitored for, I think, 5 years. And I reviewed the monitoring data, and except where we expect to see a little bit of settlement in the center of a landfill where there's waste
yeah.
from secondary degradation of the waste. It doesn't move at all. So I'm really comfortable with this
great.
One.
Well, I appreciated the cross section too that just showed where how you had the reduction and keeping it off that intercept from hooked in and getting it off the area and
yeah.
moving it down slope. So that was helpful to see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions? Gina, may I ask you to join us again? I don't have any speaker cards, so I think we're getting there.
And the board staff here, the Humboldt Waste Management staff is here if you have any questions as well.
Again, I don't have any speaker cards. I assume we're here and we're good. So I think that as it goes, for one thing, Gina, I want to thank you. It looks like this has had many iterations of closure. I think it's very smart to have a flexibility in this plan to deal with an old burn dump site as well and get two birds with one stone and allow that flexibility, and yet it's not required, but it sounds like parties are moving in that direction. It sounds like we have instruments of regulatory control out here that allows for that process to happen, and so I think you're there. And I want to, for one, thank you very much and staff in general for doing this work, Diana as well, and others that I know worked on this site for a long time. So I appreciate it. I appreciate also the dischargers and the responsible parties being here as well. Mr. Massey.
Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion to adopt order number R12013-0014.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Thank you very much
for
coming.
I'd like to thank the HWMA board for being here and your show support on that. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.